Freddie McManus, how you feeling, man?
Oh God, I didn't time the sip right. I was ready to.
No, I timed. I saw you sipping, and I was like,
"Now."
I'm used to the most self-indulgent, lengthy podcast intros where mate, they're not even bringing you in until like 18 minutes in.
No, I got
We go. Ryan Sim presses record. The words Freddie McManus are coming out of his mouth.
Man, I am a. Well, this is episode like 22 or something now, so. People don't want to hear from me. They want to hear from the guest, honestly.
It feels like a waning podcast to me. Someone being like, you know, the biggest issue with this one is the host diminishing returns.
Really, really unlikable host.
22 eps being the ceiling. You're doing better than some.
I'm just like, you know, how much does a garden variety white guy have to offer?
I mean, I think it's either you get in, it sort of falls apart in the 20s, or it makes it past like 300 apps.
Oh, that's
There's
true.
There's no in between.
I don't have that Theo Vaughn, like, I mean, let's call it what it is, white pride.
Yeah, I'll make also, Theo Vaughn. I'm sure you had guys in your neighborhood who did some funky shit. Like, let's, you know, I'm sure there's something there.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, we won't meander. We'll get right to it.
Let's get to it. Yeah, no. So, Freddie, you are, like most of my guests, a stand-up comedian. You're about to go... By the time this comes out, I think this is coming out like April 10th. I think you'll be in Melbourne doing your show.
Mate, it's pretty embarrassing. I'll already be back.
Oh, really?
Is it so? Yeah, my last show is April 6th.
Do we need to put this out earlier?
Mate, put it out. Literally, this should be live. Fire up the gram, brother.
So you're leaving on you're leaving next week.
It is Saturday. I am leaving on Monday, the 25th of March.
Oh, you're leaving Monday?
I do.
I'm out of whack, dude. I don't even know what day it is today.
This is already we're not making it to episode 23 with this attitude, brother.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'll chuck it out early and try and get some extra people to your show. If
you are listening to this, it will show Ryan's respect for me whether or not this comes out in a way that suits my timeline or if it comes out on the 10th of April. If it comes out on the 10th of April now, after this on-air discussion we've had, that's an act of war from you. That's you saying, I have no respect for you or your comedy dreams. I'm putting this out whenever the fuck I want. And hey, fuck your career. I mean, dude, I'm sort of dividing my attention here between the listeners, who of course are king.
Customer knows best.
And just a sort of off-air conversation with you. But what would you say the Melbourne listenership of this podcast is?
I don't really know. I know I've got a few in Brisbane, a few in Adelaide, definitely. I actually don't know how many. If you're in Melbourne and you're listening, send me a DM. Let me know.
Look, if you're in Melbourne and you're listening, honestly,
go to Freddie's show.
You're keeping me afloat right now. I'm gasping for air. As you can see, the host has done me zero favors. Early in this podcast, he's thrown me into drown. His dog sexually assaulted me on the way into the house. He's made me listen to some of the most hateful musical content I've ever been exposed to in my entire life. And now, really Melbourne listener, singular. And by that, I mean Sydney comedian who recently moved to Melbourne. Let's be honest, that's probably who it is.
Zach Jory, who's producing your show.
Zach Jory, I swear to cunting Christ, I need you now more than I've ever needed you. Come to my show, remind me later.
Zach, who's running the venue your show is in, buys a ticket
Zach,
to your show.
Zach, who is the tech for my show.
Please buy a ticket.
For the love of God, I need you.
Jesus Christ, what an intro. What an intro.
Yeah, that's how you do an intro, brother. Just I'm here with Freddie McManus and then just throw the hot potato at me.
I'm kidding, give me a break. I was about to be like, best newcomer nom.
Oh,
best newcomer nom 2023, baby.
But as you can see, it's not gone to my head at all.
Go see.
If we'd done this podcast a year ago, I would have been like, oh, thank you so much, Ryan. Oh, your dog's so cute.
Yeah.
This motherfucker licked my balls.
Do you know who I am?
Oh, 100%.
I was nominated.
Hey, I'm best newcomer to this podcast too.
So you got a best newcomer nom for your show last year. You're following that up. How are you feeling about it? The sophomore effort.
Dude, I feel...
The hard second album.
I have thought about it in that context, as everyone does. But I think it makes it a lot easier to make the second album when no one listened to the first one.
It's an interesting thing. Hey, it's like obviously someone from the festival came and saw it and realized you're very good. But like, what were audiences like for you last year?
I mean, yeah, I don't want a peek behind the curtain, but yeah, I was pretty desperately flowering like 10 minutes before my show.
Yeah.
And
few
pure strength of spirit and character was able to go like, you could just walk up here for an hour, you know, have a beer, watch the show. But I feel a lot better about this year in terms of the show. Like, you have that sort of safety net where you could just play the hits from last year's. No one in Melbourne said it the wiser.
Sure.
I am in the position where I feel really good about the new show that I've written. So better than ever. I'm coming bigger, better, stronger. And you know what? There's a little award called Best Show, and I'm coming for that motherfucker.
Are you actually coming for it?
Absolutely not. I mean, no.
But the show, so if I'm going to put this out early for you, the show's called Remind Me Later.
It is, yeah.
It's a follow-up to your last show, which was Freddie McManus is Stoppable.
Yes.
Yeah. You're funny.
Thank you, man.
For everyone listening, Freddie is fucking funny.
Hey, I know it has not been overwhelmingly apparent over the course of this, let's say, quite antagonistic episode so far.
Are you accusing me of being antagonistic?
No, no. Oh, no. That's on my end.
Oh, it's reclaimed. It's a reclaimed
and look, term. And look, you asked, is it okay if I film this? I'm actually very grateful for it because you can see my hands are up. When it comes to the borderline psychotic opening to this episode, my hands are very much up. That's on me. Ryan offered me a pastry on the way in. And you know what? The dog is actually quite cute. If we're putting all the cards on this beautiful table, I got water. I'm
very hospitable when people come in.
And if it isn't the most beautiful water there is.
Sydney drinking water. Best water in the world.
Oh, yeah, dude. That's some good tap right there.
I got to stop banging the mic. That's so funny.
Banging the mic.
God damn. But yeah, you're a stand-up comedian. New show. Go see it if you're in Melbourne. Or Sydney. You're doing Sydney as well.
I am, yeah. May 18th and 19th.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Have you been interstate yet with it? Did you go to Adelaide?
I did not go to Adelaide. I have only
For reasons?
Yeah, I mean, I've only heard people come back being like, that was the worst 2 weeks of my life. Right, yeah. There appears to be one tent in Adelaide where people go and see your comedy. And if you are outside of that tent, it's like District 9. Like, when you know what I mean? Like, the rest of them are just like,
you bloody prawns.
What's it got on my tongue?
Just fucking Damien Power calling you a prawn.
Dude, like 100%. Yeah. There's like one big corporation doing like puppetry of the penis in like the main building, the main complex. And if you're outside of that, you're like trying to make a spaceship to get to Melbourne.
The Hannah Gadsby Industrial Complex. Yeah, like,
exactly. Hey, you fucking open mic over here.
Hey, open micer.
Let's go see your open micers over here doing your little 7 to 10 minute spots, huh? You're going to do the runner room. You're going to do the runner room, you little coward.
That's cute. That's
oh
cute.
My God. The levels on this podcast, I can only apologize.
No, sorry.
Two of the louder men Australian comedy has to offer.
Okay, so I did that beer bar gig that we did together a little while ago. I did that again last week.
And I mean, not to flex, I've been barred, but...
You have not been barred.
I'm kidding around.
I've been banned. You've been banned from every gig in Sydney.
Hey, mate, they're trying to silence me. All the more reason to come and see my show.
You're too edgy.
It's only sound engineers who are barring me. It's not the content. It's just the sheer volume. They go
peeking out the mics.
The booker books me and the sound engineer's going, so you want to have speakers, do you? You want to have them, do you?
Yeah.
And you book McManus. So you see the problem we have? You want to have functioning speakers,
but I'm so,
and you book McManus.
I'm usually pretty, I don't think it's on you. I don't think it's on me. I think it's on the person on the sound desk. Like, just turn the volume down.
Right.
You know? Because at this point, like, if the show's been loud, I will literally, before I even say a joke, the least funny thing you can do is like, am I too loud for you guys?
Oh, you see, I would
because
never
if
do
you're
that.
Blasting their ears off, they're not going to be laughing. They're going to be like, oh, this is a bit uncomfortable.
So this is where you and I differ, Ryan. And honestly, this has become a pep talk.
Okay.
That's the loser in you speaking.
Oh, is this not like a winning mentality. Is this beta male shit?
Absolutely correct. Yeah, fire up whatever the edit music is for when Andrew Tate's spouting whatever he's talking about. Fire that music up when I say this to you. You make no apologies for how loud you are. You fucking feed it to him. You rattle their eardrums to within an inch of their life. I know this from my day job. Ear hair cells, once they die, they don't come back.
Yeah, right.
Okay? So you're saying your ear hair cells are on the line here, but I'm not willing to take a backward step. Okay. I'm here because I have a new joke about shoelaces. And from what I can see in the crowd, some of you have them on your shoes currently.
I got a new bit about how tiny my dick is, and you guys need to hear it at full volume.
Hey, mate, something's not tiny, and it's this diaphragm right here. Fire up. You've made a mistake there by even remotely trying to establish...
I've shown vulnerability.
Correct. And, you know, this isn't fucking Simon Amstel tiptoeing around on the stand-up stage. This is Simon Amstel on Nevermind the Buzzcocks telling Jermaine Jackson that he's had work done. We can all see it. And also, his brother may or may not have been a sex offender. That is the finest, sorry to segue into something completely irrelevant, but the best dichotomy I've ever seen in comedy is how Simon Amstel hosted this show, Nevermind the Bus Coast, to hear it. And he was unbelievable. It's maybe my favorite job any comedian has done hosting a TV show ever.
Is he just a cunt? He's just a cunt as a host?
He isn't. He also writes, like, he's so funny. Like, it's just great. Like, he largely keeps people on side. And the people who aren't on side, it's very clear that they don't like any jokes about them, let alone someone who's really going for him. And then his stand-up special, like, a bunch of people show up thinking, like, that's what they're going to get. It's like, look at both that
barrels.
Jumper. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And he just walks up and he goes, I got two sinks in my house. I thought that would give me some joy. It is a constant reminder of how lonely I am. And it's, like, unbelievable. He can do both. And so we're opposite sides of Simon Amstel, is what I'm saying.
True.
You're the fucking drip crying in the bathroom.
Hey, oh, whoa.
And I'm the guy going to Lily Allen, shut up, Lily.
Shut up, bitch. Yeah. Biatch.
Looking prime Adele in her eye and going, maybe lose a bit of weight, hey? No, he never said that. He never said that. And he shouldn't have.
He should not say that because.
He never said that. He was way wittier and funnier, and it's great. You know, look him up.
A little thing called Netflix. You might have heard of it.
Jesus Christ.
Yep. Okay, cool. So we've established that you've got a show. We've established your main influence, Simon Amstel.
It's up there. It's on the Rushmore.
You are fired up. Are you caffeinated? Or this is just you?
Mate, if we're going to get onto this album finally, I will reveal.
It's only been 10 minutes. I'm trying to give the people some context for who you are.
Sorry, mate. Well, I mean, I've done a phenomenal job of that.
Dude, you and Jack come in here and you guys like totally out. You host the podcast. So Jack Wright came in. He did an episode. He's like,
yep.
He's hosting the podcast. You're hosting this podcast.
I will say that... Putting me with Jack Wright, like, I will say it's a Russian doll system, and I'm the bigger doll, okay? So you had...
You hear that, Jackie?
We got a puny,
Jackie boy.
Puny little doll over here.
I'm big. I'm a big boy.
You are objectively large.
Hey, whoa.
Oh, I hate to get all Amstel with it. But you're a big boy. Jack Wright, slightly bigger doll in terms of energy and, you know, sort of spirit in terms of how mean he's willing to be.
Oh, yeah.
And then
mean,
you're looking at one of the
boy.
Bigger dolls going. With a mic in my hand, good luck. Take me away. Good luck. But yes, I will reveal to you that the album I have come to talk to you about,
yes.
I listened to on the walk here. So
you
any
walked here?
I did.
From where?
Newtown. It was just over an hour. It was longer than I thought. Just peek behind the showbiz curtain. But I power walked listening to this stuff, this filth, this utter absolute poison that you forced me to listen to. And if it's affected my mood, energy, and overall vibe going into this podcast, I humbly and openly, again, looking the camera down the barrel, apologize. And honestly, that's all I can do. Maybe listen and be more of a giving podcast guest. Sure, but that's down the line.
We might get there eventually.
Hey, look, you said only 10 minutes, so as long as we're not turning the mics off at 15, I have a chance at redemption. And isn't that what we all tune in for? Rags to, we can only hope, riches. I'll have that pastry now, thanks, right?
you need some sugar. You need some more sugar. All right, well, with that, we are talking... So if you're tuning in now... Each episode, we focus on a different year. We're working through the years.
Okay.
And we focus on a single iconic hardcore record that came out in that year.
Yes.
So this year is 2002, depending on when this comes out. We might have jumped forward a few years. We might be doing some time travel here,
okay.
Which is fine. I want you to sell tickets.
Nice.
I want you to sell 3 extra tickets to Melbourne.
Hey, brother, 2002, I mean, we're barely a year away from that awful day.
Mm,
right?
Terrible, terrible day.
That terrible day. You probably should skip 01, in my opinion. Given what happened, you probably should skip it.
01's a great episode.
Okay. With who?
Beck Charwood.
She's on radio as well, so she knows about music and stuff.
She does know about
music. If you think I'm insufferable now, wait until you hear my music text.
Wait until you hear Freddie on Triple J Breakfast. Can you imagine?
Going, mate, I just want to hear... Art Garfunkel, not Simon and Garfunkel, just
I
Art.
I want his solo shit.
Art solo stuff. Is that too much?
It's
too arse.
Underrated.
It'd be that and then like Nas, when people didn't think Nas was good, I love that stuff.
Did anyone ever think Nas wasn't good?
I think people were like, when the Jay-Z thing was happening, like...
Oh, but they loved Illmatic. Like, they loved the debut.
But that's what I mean. He was like, I can't even quote Jay-Z right now, which is so embarrassing on a podcast.
Because you're not allowed to say the N-word? Is that what you're trying to say?
Oh, I'll say it. No, I mean...
Freddie, no.
He like talks about how many albums he released in the last few years compared to how many Jay released and how many were hits compared to flops and like just gets the numbers out and goes like, I'm absolutely eating you alive here. Like there is no rivalry. So, you know, that's also another sort of non sequitur that I've graced the airwaves with.
No, I love it. I love it. Let's, so 2002, we are talking about the album Perseverance by the band Hatebreed. Hatebreed. Connecticut hardcore band.
Okay.
From New Haven. defined the genre known as Connecticut hardcore. Defined the scene.
Yeah, wow.
Their first album came out in 97, and that was called Satisfaction is the Death of Desire.
Okay.
And then 5 years later, they released their follow-up.
Which is called Persevere.
Which is this one, Perseverance.
Now, Perseverance, yeah.
What was your... I guess you've already given us your first impressions of this record just by your general mood and demeanor. What is... Like, what's... Where does this fit in with your music taste? Did you have any point of reference coming into this?
I have, for many years, said to people when they're like, what kind of music do you listen to? I go, oh, all kinds. Like, genuinely, I feel like I float through, like, yeah, I've listened to a bit of everything over the years. It has now occurred to me... based on what I just listened to this morning, that there is a complete blind spot
right
there for me. And it is songs that begin, end, and have a bit in the middle like these ones. Where like the lyrics, dude, the titles are like, I was, a lot of the titles that are quite sort of uplifting and inspirational.
Yeah, there's a lot of positivity.
Those are sentiments that I've only really seen explored in like musical theater.
Yep.
Like you look at the track list of this thing. It could be Dear Evan Hansen you're looking at.
Proven, Perseverance, You're Never Alone.
Will Be Heard.
That does sound like a Frozen, dude, a song from Frozen. You're Never Alone.
That's Broadway shit. And then you have, of course you have like Smash Your Enemies, whatever
Smash
it is.
Smash Your Enemies, you know, Unloved, Blood Soaked Memories.
Hey, look, just in case people are still listening from 97 and want a bit of hate in their heart.
Yes.
There's no crime in that.
If you want to breathe some hate.
When you sent me you sent via Messenger the sort of full album over Spotify.
The link to Spotify.
It shows the
artwork.
Album cover and obviously the name of the album and the name of the band. And I was sat with my housemate at the time.
Yes.
And I'd kind of been explaining what podcast I was heading over to see. And then I get it out and I show her and she goes, you made that up on like Canva. You're doing a bit this guy's got me to listen to this super hardcore album and it's like, kill yourself. Like the other thing I really enjoyed before we get into like track for track is you put in like a little sort of context as to when you would listen to this, what this would sort of fit. So you're like, oh, if you're strangling the life out of someone in a public bathroom, maybe pop this on. Like whatever. And I'm thinking like, I don't know if you know what my schedule is, but you know full well I'm gonna listen to this on the walk to the podcast record.
It's gonna
be a Saturday morning. Like the sun's out and I'm just gonna be, it's the first time I am really bad at listening to my headphones too loud, and you know how the phone tells you now when you listen at an unsafe level? My phone is very happy with you getting me to listen to this because I had to have it like right down to like 25% volume.
Jack Wright, not to rehash like past episodes,
I apologize.
Jack Wright, when I had him on, he was like, I listened to this album. So we did a band called Earth Crisis.
And the earth is in crisis, so you know,
crisis,
you're doing
yeah.
fine.
He's like, I chain smoked this whole, like during this whole album to try and have a negative association with smoking. I'm trying to quit smoking, so I just chain smoked through this whole album. So I have that negative.
Yeah, right.
He's like, this is going to make me quit.
Yeah,
because every time I smoke, I'm going to think of
this. I should have done that
album
with like Red Rock Deli chips.
Yeah,
I don't know what my version of that is.
Yeah.
I don't know, a glass of the water. I don't know. Yeah, maybe like, you know, the no fizzy drink guy where every day he's like, hey, again, I did it. No fizzy drink.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where the path I'll go down. But yeah, I mean, Jack's still smoking. So what the fuck did that do for
him?
You know what I mean? If anything, he has...
He's more powerful than...
Yeah, if anything, he's darker, certainly, than he was.
If that was
possible.
He's
certainly tougher to be around.
He's more obnoxious.
Like, yeah, imagine he's like, oh, I'm actually going to quit smoking as a result of this album, and you become a worse hang and a better smoker. Like, what are we doing here? Jesus Christ.
But you're like... You are the, what am I trying to say? You're the picture of masculinity. You're
And if we could just take a screenshot of what's right here. The picture of masculinity. No, and that's the name of this episode, by the way.
Yeah, the picture of masculinity.
100%.
You're athletic. You play a lot of sports. You're into the UFC and stuff, right?
I do love it. Yeah.
So these guys, they're still a band. They've been going since 1995, right? Right. And they were the sponsor. This is UFC music, mm-hmm. I think. This is pro wrestling music.
There's
UFC
a song
music.
Called Face the Pain that is still the anthem of the UFC, even though everyone who watches reports on is a part of the UFC hates it more than anything. Right. It's like the worst song ever.
Well, this is jumping forward. This isn't like about the album. This is like obviously where they ended up, but I think it was inevitable. They were a longtime sponsor of Chris Camozzi.
Nice.
I don't know that guy.
I mean, it's a name I've maybe heard once before.
Right.
But I just love like a band sponsoring
an
athlete. Love that.
But then in 2013, he was told by the UFC that he had to cover up the logos on his shorts and stuff.
So they had a whole thing. They got a deal with Reebok done. And so all the sponsors.
I read that it was because their drummer went to jail for murder.
Okay, maybe it predates the Reebok deal. I love how I'm interrupting. You're like, I have a literal crime in my back pocket, ready to unleash that on the podcast. I go, actually, I think you'll find they signed a contract with Reebok that precluded any other sponsors on the show.
I dare say they would care more about that, though.
Oh, dude, there's more money involved. Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. I hate to, I'm a fan of the UFC, the fights and stuff like that, but the fighters, my God, what are the worst rap sheets? It's the UFC heavyweight champion right now has hit a pregnant woman with his car and kept driving. So you know what I mean? Like, John Jones should probably get hate breed
or
whatever.
Is that the guy with the crazy blue braids?
No.
No? Okay.
That's the thing. The guy with the blue braids is like a loser who like games at home. you know what I mean? Like, the guys who like look like with the face tattoos, like they're usually like fucking gamer nerds.
They're the ones with money to get face tattoos.
And then the guys who look like sort of athletes, like do you know what I mean? Like John Jones probably could have been in the NFL, in the NBA, like just an unbelievable athlete.
Yeah.
Also, the only reason he does MMA is because there's some hate in his heart.
Well, this is the soundtrack to that shit. Right. That is, it just is what it is.
So
you know?
what? Put you. I had to I think I messaged family members being like, I've missold Ryan Sim to you. I've never even told them
what
about
are you.
But I'm still thinking, in case I brought him up as an aside, oh, Ryan, lovely guy. I said I was so wrong. I can't believe
this
was
I'm not a lovely guy.
This is a part of your life.
Big part of my. I still like this album. I like this album. This album gets me fired up.
And it gets you fired up in what way? Because I've seen you high energy.
Yeah.
But is there a different side to the upbeat Ryan Sim that this music brings out?
I think the service this album really provides to the individual is fuel for physical activity.
Right.
Honestly. This is a workout album. This is a running album, I reckon.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You see, I run and I listen to, there are different songs that get me going when I'm running, and usually they're ones you wouldn't expect.
Yeah,
because
sure.
You're almost surprised by how the momentum of it is sort of carrying you through.
Yeah,
Whereas this, it's very much the vibe remains pretty much rigid the entire way through.
Dude, there's not. I mean, there's
I would
one...
need to surprise my mind with oh, and now we're playing an Aretha Franklin song.
There's
but that kind of goes a little bit.
I think there's one sort of lull. There's one sort of dynamic sort of brings it down.
Sure.
That's that Blood Soaked Memories one with the tribal drumming all the way through. But even in that song, it's okay, we're just doing this for 3 minutes, and then we're back into what we're doing for the rest of the
fucking
time.
You said it'd be great for a run. This is my pitch to you of what this is a great warm-up album for.
Yeah.
You're going to hang with the boys, and the boys is not a gendered term. The boys can be anyone.
No, boys is gender neutral.
You're hanging out with the boys. You fire one of these up, and it has to be one of the songs that's ad-lib heavy. Because I come from the world of... I don't come from the world of hip-hop, but in terms of my point of reference...
Do you reckon that's your main?
For ad-libs, it's in hip-hop how it works, and it's usually whispered, or it's one person. What I fucking loved about this is someone will say, I'll spill blood from your neck, and then all the boys come in the back going, he doesn't say that lightly. They all fucking... They all come in. And if I'm going
It's very different to Travis Scott being it's lit.
Yeah, 100%. It's all the boys going, he's not lying.
He will kill you.
100%. And that, I remember on the walk, that I was that I can get behind, is the fellas just, he's saying some stuff
yeah,
where
yeah, yeah.
you need your boys to be with you, yeah, saying, no, no, we're not leaving him out in the lurch here.
Yeah.
Like to say like, oh, it's kind of weird you would go that far. They're going, and we're right there with him.
Yeah.
Whatever it's sentiment he is expressing right now, whoever he wants to fucking get at.
Yeah. Friends, hey, friends means, friends doesn't mean I'll talk you out of it. Friends means I'll hold your hand through the prison
scene,
bars.
It's,
you
know, 100%. Oh, I'm so, we finally connected. Beautiful moment. Checkpoint in the pod, if you will.
It's a new chapter.
It's that scene in... yeah, you bet. You don't chapter these things? But chapter
this
one,
a real,
Freddy
real.
Inanely rants. And then 47 minutes later, it's 2 minutes
Freddy
like,
tries to fight me. Yeah. 10 minutes.
But going on from what you said, it's like that scene in Spider-Man 2 where they're on the train and like they're trying to, the octopus guy's trying to get at Spider-Man and just the New York, of New York.
Octopus guy.
Yes. I mean, the probably another supervillain. Name of one of the bands you love.
Octopus guy.
Like, but he's trying to fucking get through. He's got a PhD. I knew that. It's Dr. Octopus. And he's trying to get to...
He's got tenure.
The man with eight legs. Oh, I've forgotten the name. The Spider-Man, yep. And he's trying to get to the eight legs.
Eight legs.
I was trying to do a riff on the thing. I mean, it flopped.
Yeah, and then...
Chapter flop.
And then Joey Diaz.
Joey Diaz and the city of New York, they step in and they go, you'll have to get through me.
The city of New York led by Joey Diaz.
Joey Diaz.
Led by famous LA comedian.
A coked up, absolutely ravenous for class A drugs, Joey Diaz.
Kidnapper.
Steps in. Oh,
convicted kidnapper, Joey Diaz.
Dude, I'm almost going to Spider-Man like, actually, the doctor nerd who just wants to like build his reactor, maybe leave him alone and maybe arrest Joey Diaz. But in any event, it's the
Joey Diaz who said the F slur on a Netflix special.
I mean, yeah, it's slur bingo with Joey. Yeah, I'll say
sorry,
that.
Sorry, I keep interrupting.
Yeah, it's like that rapport we generated is immediately disintegrated by us just interrupting each other. But yeah, when the boys in the band with the ad libs get in behind to support, it's like when they stepped in front of Spider-Man going,
Jamie
you have
Jaster,
to go through me.
The singer.
Sure.
Is Spider-Man.
Yes.
And the boys in the band.
Yes.
Are the city of New York.
Yes. When they step in between and they go, you can't get to him without going through us first. And that expression of not even, as I say, not even male friendship, just like loyal with your boys.
Yeah.
Imagine a hang at Vic on the Park with that pulsing through your veins. Imagine going, oh, and now I'm going to have 8 beers with people I love. Oh my fucking
god. You
want
to see me fail?
Oh my god. Yeah, also hilarious
finishing the jug. You want to see me fail?
A lot of lyrics from that first song are things I said word for word at last year's Melbourne International Comedy Festival.
Oh yeah, I saw the Chortle review. He was alienated.
Oh mate.
Oh, are you happy about this?
Yeah, dude. Oh my god. Yeah, that was me at the Cooper's Inn most nights.
That's so funny.
But yeah, dude, like, I don't even know. Like, I did find the only moments I could really connect with the album is when I realized that everyone in this band is so fully, wholeheartedly into what they're doing.
Yeah.
There's something about that that does win you over. By the time we get into sort of later tracks, I do forget the names because they all kind of do blur into each other.
Dude, the second half of this album,
I will
album,
be heard,
half,
I think. I will be heard.
That's
like,
a good one. It's a good one.
It just felt like...
That's the one that hooks you, Freddie.
When you told me...
That's the gateway drug.
It's 97, and then here we are
in
02.
Their first album was 97. Oh,
That's what I mean.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
and now we're in 02. That's over an Olympic cycle. For any people listening, the torch went out, it went back up again, and then it went out again. And then we have a year, and then the towers fell. We won't get into it. Then they're coming back in 02. Like, shit, are people still going to be, you know, can we expand outside of Connecticut? Which, for some reason, is a scene, you're telling me.
There's defining elements of Connecticut hardcore as a genre.
We've got UFC middleweight Chris Camozzi coming off a loss. We've got to get something that really galvanizes the population. And I Will Be Heard is that song. Mm-hmm. The rhythm comes in, and me on this walk, bear in mind, it's 2024. I sponsor no UFC fighters.
I'm about to embark
on a voyage to Melbourne, where, as we know, we don't know how I'm going to come out of that, if I'm going to come out of that. You see, this is how the sound levels, I bring it back down.
Yeah, sure. I'm very worried about this episode.
Yeah, as you should be. Hey, but Ryan, when I was screaming for the first 40 minutes of this episode... Do you know what I was saying spiritually to you?
I will be heard.
I will be heard.
I will be heard. I will be heard!
That's the one that gets you, man. That's the first song I heard from Hatebreed, and I was like, you know what? I'm a middle-class suburban white kid from the city of Brisbane. Right. My parents are still together. I need this. I need this in my life.
Dude, it's great how you said, I will be heard, and the city of Brisbane said, no.
No, thanks.
Unbelievable. But yeah, so that was one that got me going. I also think, yeah, I've kind of covered, those were my two main points, is the musical theater adjacent titles,
yeah,
and themes. I found it interesting to have that explored.
Yeah.
Also, I will be heard. Where does that come in the set in case, like, this guy must lose his voice at a certain point?
I have only seen them once. I saw them support Slipknot at the Brisbane Convention Center. I don't remember what year it was.
You got that bloodstained memory or whatever.
I got that bloodstained, blood-soaked memory.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm just trying to connect with a friend about an album, but okay, I guess I got the word wrong.
They definitely played it. I don't remember where in the set. Maybe, I reckon either Dead Middle. They definitely didn't open with it. Either right in the middle or they close with it, I reckon.
So, when you go and see Slipknot, and there's an opening act before.
I'm assuming you know Slipknot,
yes,
by the way. Because like, so many episodes, I'll just like fly off band names and people
Slipknot,
be like,
no, I know,
whatever.
But to be fair, my only point of reference to this genre at all is the song Killing in the Name of by Rage Against the Machine, sorry, my bad. But
rage,
that is the one
rage
that is
of the machine.
I mean, you know, the machine must have been mad for there to be rage against it.
Yeah, sure.
So
yeah.
I think it's mutually,
there's rage on both sides.
Mutually assured destruction there. But that's like a pop song in the genre. Do you know what I mean? Like, where everyone's like, but that's my only point of reference. But if you're at a Slipknot concert and these guys come out with this much heat, at what point are you just fucking exhausted when the Slipknot fellas?
Well, I think it's different. So I think like, yeah, that's definitely part of it. And it's like a common, especially coming out of the 90s, it was like a common story. Like, would it surprise you to learn that this record was released on Universal? It was released on a major label in 2002.
Yes, purely based on the album cover artwork.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But this was like, you got to remember, like, late 90s was all Korn, it was all Limp Bizkit, it was Slipknot, right? So heavy music was becoming like corporate. It was like definitely becoming corporatized. It was like proven to be commercially viable. And there was a whole population here who could make these records chart. Like, they're not going to be number ones or anything else, but they'll appear on the fucking charts.
There are a lot of, I'm looking at like my train journey to work now very differently when you know that there's someone in the carriage
listening to this.
Statistically, there is someone suited up listening to this.
Yeah. But there was just something about this band, like it might have been the right place, right time or whatever, but they made that crossover. So they came from the underground Connecticut scene, like a respected band in the hardcore punk scene, and they traverse. They got the major label, and then they got these huge tours with bands like Slayer, just like big bands, Slayer, Napalm Death, stuff like that. So that just exposed them to the wider commercial metal market.
Right.
And then Jamie Jassy, he was a host on MTV. He hosted the metal show on MTV. Like, this is like, we'll be right back! This is like down the line, and he's like a respected authority in terms of like, not even just like the heavy scene or heavy music, but like almost like as a critic or as like a tastemaker.
How does his speaking voice sound?
I've never heard him speak. I'm not, I like, it's,
so you've not heard the
me,
MTV
it's,
stuff?
It's this album. It's just this album. This is my main.
Like, I would love
listened,
to fire
I've listened
up.
To everything else, but like, this is the one I come back to.
I always think, because it's a different vocal
it's weird,
stamina.
Hey? Because he's screaming his fucking lungs out, but you can hear every word.
Yeah. And I think
that's what is attractive for the metal market.
Right.
Like people who are listening. Yeah, it's just like a different, because like so much hardcore like albums that I've had people listen to on this podcast, they're like, I'm sure they've got a message, but I cannot tell what it is. Mm. Like they're just like so hoarse, it's like so emotional. Whereas this is like powerful, but it doesn't feel emotional when you listen to it. Like the lyrics, the words themselves are, but like his delivery is very like technical almost. It's just like, I need you to hear these words. Like,
yeah, I
will be
comp
hurt.
The comp I made, beautiful callback. That was elegant work from you.
Thanks.
The comp I made is the people who listen to this music and really appreciate it, I have them compartmentalized in the same way as people who love Formula One where the people who don't get it go, it's just loud, it's repetitive, they go around the same track, and the noise is just the drone, like, it almost cancels each other out, and the people who are into it go, you don't understand, like, there's a nuance and real technical proficiency to it, and there's, like, there are real narratives, and there's real, like, drama and stuff, and, like, to the point where, like, now I think that I'm older, I have an appreciation, like, from a distance. I'm not a Formula One fan because I watched the documentary.
Yeah, but I did get
an increased respect and appreciation for how elite that is.
Absolutely,
And the thing I love you have to be to do it. And it's the same with this where, like, I can see a great deal of, like, technical proficiency in it.
Yeah.
But I also can't look past, like, in my heart and my soul as someone trying to appreciate the music. I can't look past what is, to me, quite repetitive, quite
it is really
confronting and quite, like, you've heard it once, there is no... And what I don't like is I was expecting way more, like, Bohemian Rhapsody, like, 8 minutes, and there's, like, four songs in the 8 minutes. I expected way more of that where it's like, now we're going into this, and more chaos in it, where it's actually quite, like, rigid, like, this is the formula.
Absolutely.
We slow it down maybe a bit, but I was expecting definitely more of a, like, dynamic song structure.
No, where it's that's
like,
not
now
what
we're
going
to fucking do this, and fuck you if you don't like it, you know?
There's that very little experimentation.
And this is me speaking as you called me before, the epitome of masculinity.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
But love to see the fellas getting after it. And that is the enduring thought I want you to leave this recording with. I love to see the fellas getting after it.
Yeah.
And when you said they're still together,
yeah.
a part of me said I always knew. It was the way they were getting behind him. The way they were getting behind him in this ad libs, I go, they're not breaking up.
They're coming up to 30 years as a band.
Hey, happy, what anniversary is that?
Oh man, 30 years?
For wedding.
Ruby.
Shit.
Ruby.
Hey, happy Ruby brothers.
I don't know. I'm just saying Ruby.
They're watching. Imagine, oh dude, that must be the apex moment for this podcast is Jamie himself.
It's Jamie Jasper.
Hey Ryan. Love the McManus. I'm going to see him in Melbourne.
If you became friends with Jamie Jaster through this podcast, that would be my life's work. That'd be great.
What's so funny is they should be invoicing Christian Bale for that fucking... Jamie Jaster walked so Christian Bale could fucking fly off that tower
in Singapore or Hong Kong
or wherever he does that. Mate, 100%. But part of it is like where he's accessing the voice from.
Yeah,
100%
yeah.
he's doing that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
Which now makes so much sense because... When you say, oh, it's really interesting how I love how you've said his name like 8 times. And I still only know him as Jamie.
Jaster.
Jamie Jaster. When you were like, when he's singing this stuff, you hear everything he's saying, the enunciation.
Yeah.
It shows when you watch like those Dark Knight movies towards the end where Christian has to like do a monologue as Batman. And he's like, you didn't know what to choose and you were always never there. And you're like, it's hard to, people are kind of making fun of him like when he was doing monologues in the voice because it's not as easy
it's
as
not
it
easy.
Looks.
It's not, it ain't easy.
You get Jamie in that fucking cape and cowl and you go, hey brother, tell the Joker he's a cunt and you're coming for him. Jamie would be like, oh, in my sleep I could do that, Chris Nolan.
Guitarist F. Sean Martin behind him like chugging under the
monologue. No, he's
under
the Commissioner Gordon.
Commissioner F. Sean Martin.
And who's the drummer?
On this album, the drummer's name was Matt Byrne.
Catwoman. Matt Woman. Oh, fuck yeah. That would be unbelievable. If these guys, for the Ruby anniversary, if these fellas could just
which it definitely
frame
is.
By frame.
Which it definitely is.
yes, we established that with our pristine minds. And imaginations. I would love a frame by frame Dark Knight, like fucking bring it to us. And I'll happily be an extra. Or I'll do whatever the guys need.
Yeah.
Looking for more acting work, you know. Have you done any extra work?
I was on a Henry ad, which I guess is an extra work. It was just ad work, I guess. I haven't been an extra. I don't think
some people have an issue being an extra in terms of what it does to their ego. Being a very clearly a supporting player, I feel like you would not have that issue. I think you'd make a great extra.
Get off my plot. Get out of my plot.
Hey, I think you make... Don't get me wrong. I think you'd be a great leading man as well.
You're perfect for background dressing.
Incorrect. I think there are people who can do multiple tiers. You're a beautiful leading man. And as this podcast has proved, a great supporting player as well.
Yeah.
When someone insists on talking nonstop.
I love that this has made such a mark on you. I just like press the button and you're just like off.
Yeah.
I like wound up the little clockwork and you're gone.
Look, I'm not loving what you're going to message your fiance about the recording when I leave, about how it went.
Mate, this is great. All bits aside, this is the ideal episode as far as I'm concerned. So keep it going.
Hey, I keep bringing it.
I don't want to observe the experiment. I don't want to affect the results, but hey.
I even dominated when you were going to release it, which is, this is crazy energy for me.
you are the alpha male of Sydney comedy.
I'm the Jamie Jassett of that motherfucker.
You're the picture of masculinity.
You're damn right. And will you be my Matt Burns?
I'll play the drums.
Well, just
I'll keep you
accompany
in,
me.
I'll keep you in company.
Whoa. Hey, mate. Do you remember the call and response thing I was talking about earlier? Do you remember the ad-libs? Who's starting the call? That's our duo name is Call and Response.
Oh, no.
Yeah. When I say Freddy, you say love you, Freddy. Thank you for having me as well,
dude.
You
really exposed your psychology to a crazy extent here today.
No, not at all. I'm just riffing around. God forbid, take me away. You know, I've done that so often in the last few weeks.
Loudest Englishman, maybe.
Yeah, mate, come on now.
English have a reputation for being quiet and mild mannered, and you are trying to break that glass ceiling.
That's not really true, though, is it? Like, there are a bunch of loud ones. Like, it's just people think that because Mr. Bean didn't speak. Do you know what I mean? If he got chatty, they'd be like, these guys never shut the fuck up. Dude, imagine Mr. Bean, like, again, I'm going to try and tie it back to the album. Like, very similar in terms of this as well, where it's like, the people who like it fucking love it. They're like, it's so technically, it's the best comedy you'll ever see because it doesn't need it doesn't need to change. It doesn't need...
Sure, yeah, they've got a formula, and the formula is, it works every single time.
So Mr. Bean is the hate breed of comedy.
British slapstick.
No, not even that, of comedy as a whole.
we're elevating Mr. Bean.
Because this is a blast of my friend Alan, I saw Dune Part 2 with... Alan Rutledge.
From the social soccer team or
No.
Oh, Rutledge. Alan Rutledge. Yeah, right? I never met him. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But we went with a group to see Dune Part 2 and he was telling me, fuck, I forgot what I was gonna say. Oh, god damn it. Well, I saw Dune Part 2 last night.
Pretty cool.
Oh, he was going he goes to me. I just remembered it. Oh fuck, I'm the worst podcast guest to ever live. He goes to me, God, you know what you must have loved? And he always tries to fuck with me and say dumb things about how much I must love England.
He goes,
you know what you must have loved? The skit Mr. Bean did on the London Olympic ceremony. He goes, that must have been your bread and butter right there. So he goes, he's just there at the keyboard, like fucking around. And I go, you know what, mate? I did love it. I thought it was fantastic. But imagine now, this is me thinking as Freddie on your podcast. Thank you for having me. This is me thinking, the Olympics make it finally, long overdue, to Connecticut,
New Haven, Connecticut.
We're there. They've built the stadium. Fucking, you got, I don't know, some kid from Stanford with the torch.
Home of Stanford,
right? They've done whatever dumb shit that people associate with that beautiful part of the world, and then suddenly you see a finger on a keyboard, and you think, oh, is it Mr. Bean again? What's going on? What is going on here? Then a few drums kick in. Where are we? What is happening here? The unmistakable face and voice of Mr. Jamie Jassett kicks in. He opens with, what would you say it would open with? I would say the beginning track of this album. What's it called?
Proven.
Because they are 30 years, baby. Ruby certified. And by then, by the time the Olympics gets to Connecticut, we're talking maybe 84 years. 84. They've been a band. Jamie Jassett performing at the Olympic ceremony. Uh-huh. Oh my God, electric.
You want to see me fail?
You
won't get your chance.
Oh, God, that's good. Imagine you're a swimmer.
You get it.
You're doing the backstroke.
You're saying you hate it, but you get it.
It takes, but you're my portal. You're my fucking, you know, you're my gateway.
Accompaniment. I'm your accompaniment.
Thank you for your service. My God, imagine you're like, I don't know why, but I always imagine the swimmers at the Olympic opening ceremony, they have their caps and like they're wearing their swimming costumes. I don't know why, I just imagine them like ready to swim, like they're
shaping
covered in,
down the,
they're covered
down
in like duck fat. You know when they do the long distance swimming and they have to like cover themselves in all that shit? Like, just imagine you hear that and there'd be a lyric that Jamie would fucking throw out there that like the shot put guy's connecting with, the fucking modern pentathlon guy is into, the dressage lady, like the horses listening up, being like, okay, like, fire up. And then
you're doing sounds.
God forbid, I go on a podcast in 2024 without a soundboard. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know, I'm sorry.
actually, embarrassing. This is the second podcast appearance in 2024 I've made where I've done a horse noise. I just realized that now. Oh well. I also made the Russian doll metaphor somewhere else. So you know, I'm a hack.
About the same people though. About the Jackrites.
No, absolutely not. I threw it out there. But I mean, yeah, I think now, 30 years, we've got to try and get them back into the mainstream. So that's really what I'm trying to do here, is I'm trying to spitball about how to get Hatebreed. Like, where would they fit, belong? Mm. I would say, what's the name of that comedy festival that's for, like, all the cancelled comedians that the guys...
The Legion of Skanks?
Yes!
Skanks Fest?
Dude, you get Jamie in with those fellas. Like, I'm talking like...
That would fit in.
Imagine if...
I think
imagine if Louis does it again. Imagine if Louis C.K. does it again. For whatever reason, I don't know, maybe he goes on, he gets invited on Stephen Colbert.
He just sold out Madison Square Garden, he's going to go do Skankfest again.
He fucking jerks off into Colbert's mug on air, and we go, okay, shit, Louis, you did it again. Oh no.
I just like that you take ownership of it, mate.
Yeah, well, exactly. And do you know what? Colbert, that liberal cucky, probably drinks it. I'm just kidding.
Sorry.
I'm just trying to riff around.
Sorry, wokists.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, Colbert, he'd probably drink the damn thing. But in any event, so, Louis, oh God, Louis has to go back into hiding. God, Louis, why'd you do it again? But those boys, they're always by his side. They go, we have a surprise guest here at the fucking, what's the festival called?
It's called Skankfest.
Skankfest.
That's what we're thinking of?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, so... Music fires up. Proven fires up. Louis just walks up like fully nude, like. Can you imagine, dude?
Yeah, Bert Kreischer takes his shirt off. I'm going to take everything off, baby.
Bert Kreischer gets Shazam out, is what he does. Yeah. He goes, what is this song? And that's how we get the voice back. UFC, obviously, as you've said, like, they can get. I do love the idea of a band sponsoring a fighter.
Yeah.
It kind of happens now because they'll have, like, I don't know, like musicians, like rappers who were like...
It's more like an entourage with those guys, right?
Exactly. Yeah. But like having like Chris Camozzi as our guy.
Yeah, I love
that. And also it speaks to the loyalty. They just love the boys.
They love the boys.
Again, not a gendered term. The boys.
They do just love the boys. Yeah.
Oh, God. And you know what? If I am open for sponsorship moving into this year's Melbourne International Comedy Festival...
If Hatebreed want to sponsor you...
Hey, Jamie, my DMs are open. Yeah. Only to you, brother.
Yeah.
Oh, God. But of course, they've probably got eyes on you. Like, I think that's more of a lateral move. Sure. You have more of an appreciation.
I've already done it. I already, like, when I first got into hardcore, like, I felt this... I wouldn't know what a good analogy for this is, because this was my subculture. And when I got into it and I started going to the hardcore club in Brisbane, like every Wednesday night, Mary Street, hardcore shows. And that was the hardcore scene there. I felt so new.
Yeah.
It wasn't the most inviting environment, but I wanted to go see these fucking
bands. Do people fight each other? No.
Like you're like, there's like, you have the mosh pit,
Yeah, but you're like 6'4". You'd be fine in there. Yeah, that's home for you, brother. You bring a pillow and a fucking nice book to read when you're in a mosh pit.
I was so skinny.
Yeah, mate. You got the range though, but continue. Yeah.
Anyway. And this was like kind of when I found this album, like I found it later and came back. But I was like, oh, this is like the first like scene sanctioned hardcore band. Like this like in my mind, like my interpretation of like what was going on in the scene and how new I just had this imposter syndrome is what I was feeling. I was like, oh, I'm just like a weedy little kid from the suburbs, you know, like I shouldn't be here, even though I like this music and that should be enough.
I mean, I see on the chip on your shoulder right fucking
dude
now.
That's I was thinking about this huge chip on my shoulder. But like I got in this band, I'm like, oh, these guys are legit. These guys, and other people think these guys are legit. So I just bought merch. I bought the merch, man.
Still
I was
have
like,
it?
No. I was wearing smalls back then.
I was gonna ask you because I don't. Whenever people are like, I was a huge part. That culture was a huge part of my life for a long time. I go, I never see you in like the merch.
Yeah, I've got some bands toured this year, and I bought some merch, but No, like these guys, I was like, oh, I can prove. Like, it was almost like, it is stupid. Like, I don't know how to make it a bit, but I just, other than saying, like, I was just like a 23 year old and I was like trying to look cool.
Yeah.
And so I had the merch, I had the whatever, but like this album has, for my money, stood the test of time. Like, I still listen to it and I still get fired up. At least that first half.
Right.
That front half is good. The second half kind of, like I said, it falls off.
I would agree. When I saw, outro at the end. I go, don't take the piss, boys. You've not innovated at all throughout the whole album. And now you're like, we're going to do something cool at the end.
Yeah, it's
like,
pretty artistic.
The one thing I thought was missing as well, a bit of a hip hop staple, but you'll find it elsewhere.
Yeah.
Skits. Why didn't the boys throw a skit
skits
in there in the middle?
Skits would be good in this type of hardcore. Because this is like tough guy hardcore. This is like what it's known
and
as.
And just a bit of, I don't know, just the fellas hanging out.
Yeah, I would like that.
Would have loved a bit of that. Because for me now, you've given me a bit of an insight into who they are.
But there's no humor. There's no humor. It's very serious
business. I respectfully disagree. They followed up, don't give up on your dreams with, I will slit your throat, you dumb cunt. There's plenty of humor. You just need to know where to look for
They're not aware of it, is what I'm saying.
Dude, the cover of the album...
Below the bottom is very funny.
Yeah. The cover of the album is funnier than any poster it's ever made for any of my shows.
So funny. It's so funny. If you are not familiar with Perseverance by Hatebreed, go Google image search it right now.
Can you... You've got
so
an about the artist
funny.
There. Can you just scroll down so I can have a look at the... Have a look at the boys? No, I just want to have a look at that photo of the boys. Also, 1.5 million monthly listeners. Okay, Jamie does not look how I thought, but we are also now in 2024.
And I don't know what era this is either. This is later era because Sean's not in it. Sean was the guitarist. He's actually a very interesting musician. He's like a hip-hop musician. He's a hip-hop producer.
Nice.
He's a instrumental artist, ambient artist. He does all this sort of stuff. And then he also does this.
So can I read a little portion for the listeners?
Please do.
Renowned for their ability to provide an intense and cathartic release for their fans. Like, that's like come in your pants shit. That's crazy. Imagine like being like, that's what we're renowned for. Is people literally having like, do you know those big church gatherings?
Where
someone's having like an exorcism conducted.
Holy
on
rollers,
them, like,
yeah.
Oh my God. Like that's opening for Slipknot for these boys.
Yeah.
Our experiences shape who we become and over time gradually produce a heavy burden that we continue to lug along. For many of us, the weight becomes so much that we struggle to get out from underneath, let alone move. That's why they're so rigid in their musical styling. So like, we're under a rock, brother.
This is like a write up for the album "Weight of the False Self." I think they're trying to get to the core of the theme of "Weight of the False Self," which
is one
of their
later era. Do you think you have a false self? It always annoys me when people are like, "You have." There is an element of a character when you're on stage.
It annoys you when people say that to you.
Yes.
Yeah, I think like I'm big on that. I'm big on that Gary Shandling thing where his whole career was just to be like no character.
Yeah, right.
I find that interesting. Because I think whether you like it or not, there
is. But where is he now?
Mate, he got cancer. Chill out, Freddie.
Hey, mate, maybe if the character got cancer, he'd still be with us. You know what I mean? also, I knew him as Larry Sanders for the first 25 years of my life. So
what a show.
But you know what I mean? Like,
Rip Torn in that show is very Jamie Jaster.
Oh, wow. Yeah, nice.
That's very like...
There you go.
You're hilarious when you're bombing. You want to see me fail?
Sure. You want to see me fail? It's going to stick with me, I think.
Are you radicalized? Because this album radicalized me. This album, like as like a little nerdy kind of dweeby. I was like dweeby right into like my early to mid 20s. I didn't really know what I was doing. Didn't know who I was.
And up to now,
how dare you?
I'm kidding around.
But no, I didn't really know who I was in this scene. I just knew that I liked this type of music and like these lyrics, like. I thought they spoke to me, like, I will be hurt. I'm like, you're a middle-class white dude.
Right.
Like, you want to see me fail? I'm like, your parents paid for your education.
I took
the wrong message from it. Like, the message from this is just, like, lift heavier weights. That should be it for guys
But
like
the
me.
Message was, start a podcast.
Start a podcast. Yeah, yeah. But do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I would say I'm not radicalized by it in that I...
Are you radicalized by me?
No, I was radicalized over the course of this podcast to invest in this podcast in a way that didn't completely push the album away. I was going to walk in here and my entire energy would be spent on saying, I hate this. I can't believe you like it. But I'll be honest, mate. I come here a changed man. The weight of my false self has been lifted. I have seen the light. And do you know what? Even though this will not translate to after the mics are turned off.
No, of course.
At least it's seen me through this beautiful episode with you.
I will say this. This is a very, there's some very funny quotes from like reviews from the time. Like this one.
This is, inject this directly into my veins.
I love this. Perseverance is the fully realized vision of what Hatebreed could be.
Who wrote that?
That's from louder.com.
Oh, we know what they want. They've got an agenda.
Yeah.
fully realized self. Basically, what they're saying is it's even louder than the last one.
The album doesn't have songs as much as it has short, abrasive blasts of catharsis.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
I've actually got a quote from the drummer from looking back on it. Like, this is a 20 year retrospective, so this was 2022. The target was to have all meat and potatoes and no filler, whether it be metal or hardcore.
There you go, no skits. That's why there's no skits.
But then, like, I love this. This is how he closed the interview. We have some new merchandise and the meet and greets will be really special. Because they're doing a 20 year tour.
Dude, actually, that's a great thing to think about for a second, is when the response you're eliciting from your audience is like intense catharsis. What do those meet and greets look like? Like, you know those people, like, I've seen it with people who are successful where there's just a fundamental imbalance between how much the person who, the fan thinks they know them and the person obviously never having met them.
Yeah.
And it can be a little weird where it's like, oh, there's just an imbalance there. But imagine if it's like, you saved my life or you gave my life meaning. And it's like, just buy a t-shirt, brother. Like, you know what I mean?
It's
like,
that meme. It's like, I'm literally a 2002 album.
Right. But that would be more intense than the gig in a way, the meet and greet. If you're like in that band, like if you're Jay and you're just sitting down there, you'd be like, buckle up, fellas, because this might get like full on.
I've been there.
Yeah?
Yeah, like recently I've been there.
Wow.
Like, I met, you know the comedian Dan Soder?
Yes.
I think he's amazing. And like, I think he's really, really amazing. And I saw him at a gig in New York when we went to America a couple of years ago. And then I was waiting for my fiance. She was in the bathroom and he was leaving the venue. I was like, I just think he's so good. I just like want to tell him that he's good. I think when someone does something remarkable, they should know that they did. Anyway, I went up to him and he saw me because it was like an empty bar. So he's walking across the room and I'm on the other side and I like approach him. So there was, I think it was just an awkward amount of distance and he like saw me coming. And he's like, "What's up, dude?" I'm like, "Oh." Like, he just wanted to leave. He just wanted to go home. He wasn't being rude, but like, I was like, "Oh man." Like,
and you were just like, "Yeah, what's up?"
Yeah, I was just like, "Hey, man, I'm just a big fan." Like, yeah, whatever. And he could not have cared less. He was like, "I want to go fucking home."
Yeah, I mean, that's a bit of that.
Which is fair. I've been at gigs. I'm a comedian.
So, yeah, I've never had someone say they're a fan, but I think
like what you were saying, this album did in a small way changed my life, because it was one of those things where it's like my experience with metal was that super corporate, it was Korn, it was Limp Bizkit, it was Slipknot, it was all that sort of stuff. And I think Slipknot have some artistic...
So you'd say there's suit and tie stuff and there's meat and potato stuff.
Yeah, meat and potato stuff.
I'm getting it.
Well, I think Slipknot
The baby deer is learning to walk. This is unbelievable that I'm doing this.
I do think Slipknot have some like musical pedigree. I think they have some lineage and they have like legitimate influences. Hatebreed came in and like, I think this is like kind of the key of like the disconnect here is like Hatebreed was more tasteful.
Right.
Because they had this history in the underground scene. So this to me is tasteful hardcore.
Okay.
Is that an alien state? Like, as someone listening to it for the first time?
Yes.
So like,
because I have no...
I understand it's juvenile and it's adolescent and stuff, but like, as far as like the history of the people in the band, as far as like their influences and where they've come from, they have established an element of taste and they've been at it from the grassroots and like worked up to fucking having an album that reaches millions of people on Universal Records.
Yeah. When you say it's like a tasteful version of the thing, it's a tasteful version of something I have no appetite for. And therefore, therefore it's like, to be honest, taste goes out the window. Yeah, like, I'm not eating that shit. Yeah. How about that?
That's so funny.
But, I do have, also it is like you say, as you get older, but it is a real thing where it's like, I don't have the energy. It was like when Taylor Swift was around it. It's like, even if I did have strong feelings about her musical, where she sits in like the pantheon of artists, which I don't have any strong feelings. Even though I did, I wouldn't express them. I don't think I have any sort of way of being like, I gotta, I gotta, I don't know, force my way in with an opinion or like a...
No, I think so there's two things that I agree with that. Like someone like Taylor Swift is so big where it's like, well, my opinion on the culture and the music itself is completely irrelevant. But I don't like the viewpoint where it's like where people go, oh, it's just not for me. It's like, okay, if an artist puts something out, it's for everyone. Right. You're allowed to have a reaction to it.
Okay.
But going into like a Taylor Swift message board and being like, this actually sucks, right, is a different thing.
And also, I guess I'm speaking less to like why the music is as big as it is, more so why people feel like this unbelievable connection
to that music. Yeah.
And to the, because obviously it's subjective. It's more the thing of like when you say this, honestly, changed my life.
Yeah, it's in a small way. In a very small way, I think it did.
It shouldn't have.
No, you know what I mean? No, like, I get that. Yeah, yeah. So, I think that's when the conversation changes, because like we can talk about, like you can be like, this album fucking sucks. And I'll be like, nah, it rules. Which is totally a fair conversation to have. But then being like, yeah, then for me to be like, well, it changed my life. And you'd be like, well, you're pretty stupid. That's not a conversation.
Also, isn't it ironic? Like, you'd much rather we could... love all you want about like, oh, hate breed, like we're gonna kill you, but like probably the artist who came closest to like changing my view on love music could do was probably Kanye West. Like,
yeah,
there's
a lot more
baggage there in terms of what the implications of that informing. Yeah.
The worst thing I could find about these guys is apparently early on, I think before they got big, Jamie Jaster proudly proclaimed he was a homophobe.
Right.
In the 90s, you know?
Yeah, I mean.
And I think he's such a media personality now, and he's sort of like had more of a platform to express his genuinely held beliefs. And I think he is not categorically not a homophobe. I think he's just an edgy.
Maybe in like a South Park way.
I think he was just an edgy boy in the Connecticut hardcore scene in the mid 90s, honestly. But then like Kanye is like, I'm a Nazi. And it's like, well, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, dude, it's pretty wild. I will say, is that an outlier in that genre for the bands to not have many skeletons, because they're so upfront and like, they're literally all their darkest inner thoughts, they're shouting it out? Or is it, it's like with UFC.
It's toxic, man. Like,
you know when people are like, oh, UFC, is it weird thing where they're like gentle giants where they let all their demons out like in the octagon and actually outside the octagon they're fine? And it's like, no, they're prone to violence. They've got like insane...
I think there's been a few. I don't think it's the majority. I think you'd probably be right. Like, it is such a cathartic outlet that a lot of people, I think anyone in their sort of like late teens, early 20s, you know, emotional shit is like, you got to work a lot of shit out. But I think if for people who keep doing this, I would say overall, no, there's not a lot of skeletons in their closets. However, as with any sort of community or scene, there have been multiple stories of like these, like frontmen of band or people of bands who have been fairly popular grooming underage women.
Right.
Yeah. There's been a couple of stories like that. Like the singer of Champion, who are a straight edge band, and straight edge, like very moralistic, very like message based, positive attitude type shit. And then it came out that he was like messaging underage girls on like Chris D'Elia shit, basically. Yeah.
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 I mean, just sorry, that band name made me laugh.
Champion,
like,
yeah.
You know, the lead singer of Champion is
Well, the people who are listening will know what I'm talking about, but yeah, that was just a straight edge band, like very like...
Yeah, wild.
Like, we've got a message, and then it's like, can you stop messaging teenagers? Like, is that your message? Like, messages you up? Is that what it is? Like, come on, man. Mate.
Yeah, messaging you up at like 7 p.m. because you're messaging a fucking 12-year-old.
In college font.
Yeah, exactly. You up. Jesus. Yeah, interesting.
All right, cool. Let's wrap it up, man. So remind me later. That's the name of your show.
It is.
Sydney and Melbourne.
I feel like I haven't been particularly funny over the course of this episode, but I promise the show is.
Are you serious?
Oh, well,
you've been making me laugh.
There you go.
I think you're funny, mate. You got some great insights. You got some great analogies.
Mate, do you know what? My analogies, I've been on a heater with the analogies.
Yeah.
I think we can agree, if nothing else, and I'm sorry, mate. I'm trying to share my time between looking at you and looking into your iPhone here.
Yeah.
Because I like to connect with my
audience. I know you do like to connect.
I would say that I've been on a heater with the analogies. It's been nothing but net with the analogies.
And if you had 3 gigs to work on those analogies, by the third gig, you'd have some fine punchlines. I'd be getting fucking those analogies.
Do you know what I mean? I'd be getting like Mark Norman being like, this is like this, this, and this, and also this. And it's like, oh my God, you know, that could have been me. You know what I mean?
What are the Melbourne dates again?
Oh, shit. the 27th of March until the 6th of April. You can find in my Instagram or, you know, wherever you might want to follow me, the dates will be available.
So
and
2 week
get the tickets. 2 weeks.
All right, cool. I'll try and get this out.
And you know, some hardcore shit. If you love this hardcore shit, it's down the barrel. I'm going to be making you have a cathartic experience. Ryan can attest to the fact.
Is the joke about your mum texting you?
Yes.
In this show,
her call me, yeah.
Fucking hell, dude, that's such a good joke.
So you have.
I don't want to burn it. I don't want to give too much away. It's a really, really brilliant.
But there you go.
Brilliant bit.
Yeah. If the phone rings in my show, it's pretty electric. You know what I mean?
you got that built in just in case.
I have one like it's like a one man show where I have like an old rotary phone like on the stage, yeah. And every time I do a bit about a phone call I had, like I go. And I simulate it. So a bit of artistry in there as well, mate. Don't you worry.
A bit of craft. Social media.
Freddie McManus on
just
Instagram.
Search Freddie McManus.
And then, me, Freddie McManus on the talk. I joined TikTok
Freddie
in
Mac,
late 2023 as a 29-year-old man.
It's
and
scary.
That's not embarrassing. I do hate the app and it's good to be there.
Nice. Thanks, Freddie. I really
Thanks
appreciate
so much
you
for having me, mate. Always a pleasure.
Dead Ramones on Instagram. Send us a DM if you want to fact check me. I've got lots of friends messaging me all the time. It's very fun to have these conversations. I had some fact checks to do this episode. And I've totally forgotten them. I am ryan.d.sim. I've got a show at Sydney Comedy Festival. It's called 13 Jokes after the Fugazi album. Very, very little to actually do with Fugazi. And there are definitely, I promise you, there are definitely more than 13 jokes in the hour. I promise. So ryan.dsm. And come to Rat Club on a Monday night. If
Fuck
you're in
yeah,
Sydney,
dude.
Do it. I think that's it, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Jamie, hit me up, brother.